Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. Don't live your life on hold with online car insurance that's driven to save you time and money.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
51551. That is the text. Before me is Craig Hughes. He's the political editor of the Irish Daily Mail. He's also founder of Night and Day Festival. Welcome, Craig.
Good morning, Oliver.
Mayo man putting on a festival in Roscommon, works for a Dublin newspaper. It's very complicated. So how does this happen? How do you become the creator of a music festival when you've got a very busy job?
Yeah, well, fortunately, I have a good team around me and a lot of crazy lunatic family members to help pull it off. I guess it started with my uncle Brendan, trained as a sound engineer in Liverpool in Paul McCartney School of Performing Arts, and he was kind of working in that field for a bit, and he was working as a production manager for the World Economic Forum, moved back to the west of Ireland and put on a small folk festival in Clamaris, Clamaris Folk Festival. And I was kind of helping out with that, and he said, look, we could do something bigger together. Mm-hmm. And so we set on that route, and there was a tailor-made grant for a new festival in Ireland's Hidden Heartlands, and we were kind of thinking, oh, perfect, this is just what we need.
Hidden Heartlands, the tourism.
Yeah, in that region of the country. We said, perfect, it looks like it's tailor-made for us. And then, of course, pandemic happened, it got pulled, and we were left going, oh God, what do we do? So we kind of ploughed ahead anyway, and somehow got the money together, booked the acts, and as soon as the pandemic ended, went ahead with it, first of all in Clonanna's house in Castlery, and then we've since moved to Lochie Forest Park, which is an amazing place to be.
So you were there last year as well?
Yeah, last year.
So this will be the third outing?
There's the third Night and Day coming up, yes.
But Brendan, you mentioned the World Economic Forum. That's the crowd that puts on Davos, is it?
Yeah, so he was working there, so putting on events for those guys.
So was he organising the event, or was he?
He's one of the organisers of part really? Of the events there, yeah.
This
so
extraordinary.
You'll have all the conspiracy theorists now coming in. Globalists!
The Bilderberg group. Yeah. Oh, so it's a globalist.
Yeah, of course.
It's supposed to be an indie festival. Yeah. Loads of music in the family.
Yeah, I mean, we all played in bands of extremely varying quality throughout the years. Thankfully, none of us will be taken to the Night and Day stage this year. But no, music has always been a real kind of central team for the family. When Brendan went away travelling with his now wife, I inherited his music collection. So he was, I guess you'd say, he was training me from a young age. And I think you even remember when he brought me along to a Radiohead concert when he came back, and I tried to pay him for the ticket, and he said, it's an education. So I guess it's been a long time
students
in gestation.
Don't pay, sort of thing, is it? That was Malahide Castle 2008.
Something like that, yeah. Beck was supporting as well.
Beck was supporting Radiohead. That's phenomenal. Yeah. To go. As a kid, you were sort of like, even though you would have been, you know, Radiohead would look like outfits. Did they play Creep? The way it added at that stage. So putting on a thing like this, you mentioned you got the grant as well. You have to bring sponsors on board.
Yeah, we didn't get the grant first time around. I mean, we're very lucky that in the absence of any money, we were kind of left wondering, you know, what do we do? And we eventually ended up, I think Brendan texted Shaul Mulryan, who's the owner of Ballymore, the sponsor of the Roscommon GAA team and all the rest of it. We've never met him, still haven't. And he came on board as a sponsor for the first 2 years, which was amazing. And then this year, Roscommon County Council and Quealtar are our main sponsors. So really, really great. They've been very active, really, you know, really engaged and really pushing it, which is really, really amazing to see.
We kind of forget that it's the county councils that push a lot of arts all over the country.
Yeah, and I must say they've been really, really excellent, really engaged and really trying to push it for Roscommon, you know, which is amazing to see.
Yeah, well, Roscommon, I think they're having a big moment. They've got the renovation Strokestown House there and the Roscommon Arts Centre, which is owned and run by the county council as well. Is a great success. And now you've got this festival going, which they hoped obviously to keep as a fixture. You're going to say something?
I think, you know, obviously the underlying current for this is to one day get pulped to play at Night and Day and have everyone singing I Want to Live Like Roscommon People.
Yeah, that's the goal, yeah. Well, you know, that's the selling point for them. They'd be very confused for, like, they surely... how can we get anyone to sponsor just to make sure that happens one stage, even if it's remotely done? Putting together a festival, imagine, is a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah.
Is money the first port of call? You need...
Yeah, well, you have cash flow is obviously an issue as well. So you got like your different times you're going to be paying for the big acts here, most of them are going to have to be paid for in advance. So that's why your festivals put on their ticket sales straight away to kind of have a constant cash flow to pay for things. And I think because it can be a bit of a precarious business, some festivals have gone bust recently. You have a lot of suppliers looking for payment up front, so that kind of creates its own challenges. But yeah, I think overall then you're looking into, like, you know, site management. When people come, like, where do you put them? How many toilets do you need? I mean, we're very blessed actually in Lochee. I guess first of all, you can arrive by boat. I think we're the only festival in the country you can arrive by boat and stay in your boat and cuff sail down the Shannon.
So you go into the Shannon and it goes into Lochee itself?
Into Lochee, yeah. And then it's because it's a purpose-built campsite, you know, everything is there already. Your indoor showers, there's indoor toilets in the campsite. So yeah, very lucky. And it's a real, I guess, kind of luxury experience for camping that you don't get at other festivals.
Because it's nice and small.
Because it's a purpose-built campsite.
Because it's already there, the camping's there. Yeah. And of course, the kids can use the facilities that are there as well, the adventure.
Exactly. We have a fully kind of immersive programme for our under 14. So it's like, whether it's drumming workshops or nature foraging or, you know, things like that, it's really engaging for the kids.
I remember when Oxygen came to an end, the promoters there were saying it was just way too expensive between insurance, security and paying the guards. Because you have to pay, apparently... I suppose for something on that scale, maybe they do. Is that something you've been...
Yeah, but I mean, the fees for that they've been very helpful to us, I must say. And I guess because our numbers are, like, compared to Oxford, which I think would have been like 70,000 or something, we're down around...
It exploded, yeah.
Yeah, we're hoping to have, I think, around 2,500 people there this year. So it's a different scales. So.
But you still have to pay.
Yeah, you do. If you're having extra guards and stuff, you pay... a portion of it.
That's curious, isn't it? Because you just think the guards are, you know, but they're almost for hire. But you put on the event, you got the license, these are the responsibilities.
Yes, it all comes with territory.
The acts then obviously are the big thing, so you're nicely supported.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, when we start putting it on, like, one of the key focuses has been to, like, promote Irish music. So every year it's been at least 90% Irish artists, you know.
Oh, go away, right.
Yes, and it's been great to, I guess, have some of the music that we love growing up. So you mentioned Ash, you got Bex One, you know, Damien Dempsey, Mick Flannery, Gemma Hayes. I'm starting to sound like a backbench TD here listening off the towns and the constituency, but it's just amazing to have, you know, such amazing artists. And Ireland is blessed with so many amazing artists that you don't really need to go abroad to kind of import talent when you have it all here. And I think as well, that's something that the artists have really bought into as well. They kind of see that, you know, we're music lovers, that we want to curate the lineup that we love, and not just something that'll sell us a lot of tickets.
The acts, it creates a nice vibe, doesn't it? Because there's a bit of nostalgia going on. A lot of the acts obviously have just continued to write music as well. Mm. We played Ash there this morning. It feels like they were gone for a long time and they've rebooted themselves.
Yeah, they've been back on the festival circuit the last 2 or 3 years, I think, from watching out. And it's one of those bands where I love them growing up, but I never got to see them. So really excited to be bringing them to Lochee for Night and Day. And then, of course, we've got the emerging acts that are coming through. There's so much exciting Irish music coming through. We're going to have Morgana, which is a really, really exciting new act, you know, like Alvaretti. And we also run a song contest each year for emerging acts to come through, and they win kind of studio recording time and a chance to play at the festival. So yeah, Dark Isle won it this year, so very excited to see those guys.
Dark Isle, are they bands, by the way? Are they all
Yeah,
solo?
Yeah, they're all bands, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the unique thing about this as well, because bands were sort of dying away there for a long time because of Ed Sheeran, Adele, Taylor Swift. It's all big individual pop acts around the world, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I guess as well, obviously dance music is we have some electronic music as well, but I guess the cost of having a dance artist is a lot lower than a kind of a big band, because you got so many more people, you got to put them up, you know, all the rest of it, so the costs add up that way. But no, we're committed to it, and it puts such a smile on your face having these bands playing and seeing how happy people are walking around the site, you know.
Dance is absolutely huge again, isn't it?
The
90s happening.
I don't remember
the 90s.
But no, I love electronic music, so we do have electronic each act, but I'm in a tug of war with my uncles to bring back an electronic stage, so let's see how that goes.
Is the dance in a tent? It has to be really indoors, isn't it?
Yeah, well, our two stages are boat inside big top tents, so just failed safe against the Irish weather.
Perfect, yeah.
Yeah, although I was looking at the
long-term... It's the west of Ireland, after all.
Indeed, but I was looking at the long-term forecast. The sun is coming, so I've been praying to the old gods and the new, so I'll keep my fingers crossed for that.
We're getting a good Wednesday. I think that's all we can hope for at the minute. How did you do it without big hitters behind you? It's so hard to compete. Congratulations, the festival organisers, is this text. I suppose the broad question really, isn't it? Going in as an indie versus massive players with massive alcohol sponsorship and everything behind them.
I guess starting small is the key to it, not biting off too much too soon. Yeah. So we're kind of trying to grow at scale, but we're always going to be a kind of a small festival. We're not going to be, you know, the next. There's not enough room for another Electric Picnic, you know. So
it's what people want, though, isn't it?
What do you mean?
Well, they don't want to be in huge crowds, and it's uncomfortable there.
Not people of a certain age. Yeah, I mean, like, that's for me. That's my very nightmare. Is going
in their 40s. Up.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, I don't want to crush. I was at the Killers the other night, standing there going, oh, this is just nice, loads of space, and there's no sky overhead. If only I could get a camp chair. But the idea of rocking up on a boat now, that sounds very attractive.
Yes, we'll have you down one of the days, Oliver. on one of your many boats, I'm sure.
I don't have any boats to put it together. I'm open to sponsorship. Oh no, I'm not allowed to do that anymore. Insurance.
Yeah, it's one of the costs in there. Again, I'm sure as we grow bigger, it'll become a bigger cost, but it's been, I guess, manageable so far.
Okay, that's good news. It's not cancelling things, or it's not a big fear.
Not yet.
It doesn't make you scared. Yeah. If I'm a band and I'm going to this lovely boutique festival, and there's nice buildings around, aren't there? Is there a listed building somewhere around the park? Or?
Yeah, so it used to be, oh God, I'm going to be getting bad now with my historical knowledge, lucky. So there used to be a kind of a big home there. It was burnt down, and then they have a kind of a tower and a visitor centre there, which is used throughout the festival. We repurposed the visitor centre as a green room.
The green room.
Oh, yeah, okay. It does indeed.
That's where the acts will be hanging out.
Yeah, they'll be hanging out looking over the water, having a nice beer or whatever else, looking over the water, getting nice and calm before they come on stage.
This is part of the attraction for them coming here.
I think so. I think we've made a real effort to kind of look after artists from day one. I mean, I think if you're looking at kind of managing budgets, you kind of go, okay, well, what can we cut out on? You say, well, don't feed the artists or anything like that. And we've made a big point of just doing that extra step to, you know, take care of the artists, make sure we've got good equipment. And we hear it back from them. They still talk about it on their own social media when they're not playing at the festival, which has been really,
cool.
really, really nice to hear.
Brilliant. How family friendly is this festival?
So under 14s attend for free with an adult with a ticket. Otherwise, it's over 20s. It's extremely family friendly. There's the family friendly aspect is really, really curated to keep kids engaged throughout. So whether it's making instruments, whether it's drumming workshops, whether it's foraging for medicinal plants through the forest, it's extremely family friendly. And I think it's probably about a third of our attendees or so will be families.
Can you use buggies around the place?
Yeah, so we're lucky that the ground, because the access roads around it doesn't really tear up like other festival sites. You're not driving big trucks in through it all the way through. So no, it is good, yeah.
Okay, and of course, most of those buggies now have like SUVs, these big wheels. That's why men are happy to push them now. They look kind of masculine. Your own family then, your mum was unwell, I think, during one of them, wasn't it? You had bad news and on top of all the stress of putting the festival, real life comes in.
So in 2014, Mam had a brain tumour taken out. So we had a really devastating time for the family, but she made a full recovery and we were all delighted. And then we announced the festival in November 2021. And then a month later, the week before Christmas, she got a phone call to say that we think the brain tumour is back.
It's back.
And we had all the excitement of just announcing the festival.
Yeah.
And then we were kind of going, oh, Jesus, you know. But I remember my dad pulling me aside and saying, oh, you know, she's not going to be able to be at the festival because you're looking at, you know, kind of chemo and surgery and all the rest of it. And I'm like, yeah, of course not. But like, that's the last thing in my mind.
Yeah.
But not only was she made a full recovery and at the festival, she insisted on working at it. So the first people who arrived were being checked in by Mam. Yeah. But it's, so it's great, made a full recovery. But I mean, coincidentally today, she's getting her 6-monthly scan. So that's just life now.
That's her life now, yeah.
We're just, yeah.
But that's 10 years after the initial, she's still with us.
So it's great. But I mean, I feel like people ask me, like, why do you do the festival? Like, why do you put all this stress in your life? But I even think, like, going back to that first festival, I was flat out running around the place interviewing politicians, you know, just generally, you know, firefighting. Didn't really get to see anyone throughout the festival. And then the Zootons were playing their encore and I just ended up back at the main stage and ran into my two parents and next thing my brother, and we just got together in a big kind of group hug.
Everyone just arrived
just singing along. And it's like, for me, it's one of my favourite moments as a family together, you know. So
yeah.
I kind of think, you know, If it never happened again, it'd be worth it for moments like that.
That's
know?
Perfect. Yeah, what's your mum's name?
Stella.
Stella. Good luck to you, Stella. Might see you for a bop there. Come here, you're juggling the day job. What Things have changed, obviously, in politics over those 10 years we're talking about. Well, you started in here at one stage, did you? You
were I worked in the investigations unit, and I credit RT with knocking the Mayo accent out of me. They sent me for elocution lessons before I...
I always thought this was a myth. There's no... Well, did you actually do elocution?
Yeah. I think it was only about two or three to make me speak clearly and so people could understand me. But it catches some people off guard. I was in Leinster House one day.
Oh, yeah.
And a politician who shall remain nameless, but let's just say they were recently elected as an MEP for Dublin. We'll call them... A or weird on. I don't know. Is that too obvious? I'm not sure. But we were talking about the intricacies of the Dáil Bar and the rules around it, the members one.
Oh yeah.
And he said, "Oh, you know, we just kind of go in there, Craig, to get away from you lot, and I don't know, people from down here on tours from Ballyhaunas." I was like, "You know, I'm from Ballyhaunas," and his face just dropped. He said, "No, you're not." And he countered them.
He said, "No, you're not from Ballyhaunas."
He said, "Oh, you're having me on here," and he said, "You didn't go to school in Ballyhaunas." As I did. He was completely mortified. I was reveling in his mortification. And he said, "Oh, look, you'll keep this between ourselves." I said, "Yeah, of course. But I just thought to myself, you know, but maybe I'll just say it once to Oliver Callan, live on the radio.
Keep it to yourself. He's gone to Brussels. You have broken some of my favourite stories in recent years. I mean, we'll go with your kind of third best story, which people remember. It's hard to kind of remember the anger at the time now, isn't it, in COVID times. But the was it vaccines? Was it the kind of people jumping the queue?
Yeah, so, and this one, I mean, it was, God, it really took off. It was, I got a phone call late at night from someone in the political world saying, "I believe you're the person to talk about, you know, mess ups in the vaccine rollout. I've been writing a lot about bad issues with it." I said, "I am." And they had heard that teachers in St. Jude's private school were vaccinated out of turn, right? At the time, you'll recall, it was only people who had been cocooning and people in kind of like, people who would have had cancer and were in active treatment. They were the only ones getting this at the time.
And everybody in the world wanted vaccines because this was the route out.
So I said about going, okay, well, there has to be a bit more to this, and eventually found out that the CEO of the Beacon Hospital, Michael Cullen, his two kids were in the school.
Oh, yes, I remember this.
He personally called the school to offer them. The story exploded. I think it's seven front pages in a row. Falling out of that, because then there was people in the creche on the Beacon campus. Then there was issues with utter queue jumping. So it really took off. And it was, people are so angry because they knew someone who really needed a vaccine, whose life would make such a massive difference to, and who weren't getting it. So that was that. It was a whirlwind of a time. And actually,
that was a good one.
The night actually we were publishing that story, I was in for kind of a midnight walk along the canal, because that's what you did at the time. And actually, the Taoiseach came walking past me the other way, and Micheál Martin at the time, and we nodded at each other coming past. And I remember just thinking, "Oh, you'll be busy tomorrow."
They were oblivious at that stage. The story of the printer that the Dáil ordered.
The Dáil printer, yeah, God, it's working now anyway. But I mean, people will.
It was a 2 million euro printer, was it?
The printer itself cost about 800 grand.
Oh right.
But then, of course, when it landed in Leinster House, it was too big to fit inside the intended room.
Yes,
there was another 200 grand spent on knocking down walls. In the meantime, it was put in storage. So the total cost came to 2 million quid. And so it was ordered in 2018. And eventually...
They refused to use it as well until they got training, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And so then eventually it was up and running by 2021. But that came about because I got an anonymous phone call from someone who said, "Oh yeah, I really like your stuff. This story about a printer." I said, "I don't believe that, you know." Put it in FY, had a big Freedom of Information request, and had a big kind of back and forth battle with them, and they eventually released the information. But I still don't know who the source of that story was, you know.
But you couldn't reveal the source because you don't know who it is.
Yeah.
But it was a whistleblower who steered you in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah.
You must get such a buzz when you... Is it the scoop when it sees on the front page, or is it the reaction? What does it for you?
I remember actually when I came in to... As Sean O'Rourke was presenting at the time, and he came in to talk about that story, and before it went down, he just went... Nothing like a good scoop, and that's what it is. It's a great rush from it, you know, great buzz, and like it's
that's the vocational aspect of journalism, and the all time great, the infamous letter signed by Leo Varadkar.
Yeah, then Taoiseach Leo Varadkar went on the Late Late Show, and he was talking about how he went to see Kylie, and there was a bit of controversy at the time, but he'd been accused of getting a free meal or something like that, and so I put in an FYI request looking for all correspondence between him and Kylie. And they came back and they said, oh no, we're refusing your request, but there is one record, but we're refusing it on personal grounds. It was big back and forth. They twice tried to refuse it. And eventually I got it. And it was, yeah, you know, Dear Kylie, you know.
It was an information commissioner, I think, had to. Was that what happened?
It was due to go to the commissioner, and then they just
relented.
There's
nothing better than a letter they don't want you to see.
But the funny thing was, a lot of people were endeared to Leo because of that letter, you know. So I think they're kind of careful.
I don't know. I think you're being very. It was one of the most cringy stories. It kind of set the tone because there was a vacuousness there that hitherto we didn't know. He was very popular at the time. Mm. I mean, we look back at it now and laugh, but it was the Dear Kylie letter. It was excruciating.
But I was going to say, I'd love to have Kylie play at the festival, but I wonder if I could get you to voice up a voice note to Kylie sometime to try and.
Of course, anytime. That is great fun. You have such an eclectic bunch of interests, as we said. And we look forward to the next scoop. Craig Hughes, where did you get your anonymous tip off? No, we can only plug one thing at a time. The Irish Daily Mail, we should say, we should credit. That's where you get Craig Hughes' scoops. Night and Day Festival, it is happening at the end of this weekend.
28th to 30th of June. Tickets still available. nightandday.ie/tickets.
nightandday.ie for a nice cosy time with the kids and all involved. And rock up on your boat. Presumably you have to pay in, obviously, from your boat.
It's free to moor your boat there. You just need to buy a weekend camping ticket. So
right. It just keeps getting better. We'll finish up with one of the acts that's going to be playing on that very weekend. Thank you, Craig Hughes, and good luck to you and your parents. Hello, Stella, one more time. 51551 is the text.
Email Oliver@rte.ie.